Go Radio Network are not necessarily those reflective of Herndon Go Radio owners, affiliates, or local sponsors. Any hurt feelings and mixed emotions infringing upon the PC movement should be referred to Herndon Go's Human Services Department, which can be reached at blah 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 blah. At which time you will be told to shut. On behalf of Herndon Go Radio Network,
I'd like to take this time now to thank you from the bottom of our watching souls. Thank you.
Ah, it is so good to see you again, sir. I see you have brought your friends with you this time. Very good, sir. Would you like your usual table? Right this way then, sir. Please follow me.
Who are we kidding? We're not that stuffy.
I knew I was being threatened. Do you think it's worth holding out? I mean, I've heard some pretty ugly things about those guys. Ugly stories.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's time for Politics Cafe, where we sit down and discuss anything and everything. No holds barred. Bring any topic to the table. We don't care. We'll discuss it. Come on in. Sit down. Take a load off. Now, the host of the show, Mark.
All right, there we are. Hey, we're back. Greetings, ladies and gentlemen, and fellow conversationalists around the world, and welcome once again to the Politics Cafe at www.herndonco.com, the best in Internet talk radio. The Politics Cafe is a small cafe located on an isolated stretch of the information superhighway. We get together once a week and grill up some fresh topics for your digestion. Welcome back, Natalie. We're having a little bit of Pal Talk problems here tonight, folks. Pal Talk has revamped its entire setup, made it all much easier access for everyone, and everyone seems to be having a much harder time with it. Hey, you gotta love it. But it's, progress. Sometimes it comes in leaps and bounds. Sometimes it comes in fits and starts. Ain't much any of us gonna do about it tonight, though. Yeah, I hear you. That old GD Pal Talk, boy, you gotta love it. Ah, folks, boy, I'll tell you what a week it's been. Going through craziness with a Royal Supreme thing. One thing happening in my life I can't talk a damn thing about tonight. I actually got selected today for jury duty. Did my damnedest to get the hell out of it, but gotta go in and, listen to a trial starting at 9 a.m. tomorrow morning. And after it's all over, maybe next week I'll talk to you about it. It's not really a big thing, just kind of run-of-the-mill criminal thing. I'll tell you what, I was so PO'd that I got picked on it. I was almost ready to sit there and tell him I was going to let the guy go anyway. But we got to wait and see what happens. Our civic duty, so to speak. It was like they had sent me a summons for 5 or 6 months ago, and it was for a courthouse. It was Christ. ...75 miles from here, you know, almost up to the Vermont border. I'm going to be able to get there is on public transportation. So I'm going to have to come up the night before. So where will you folks be putting me up at? Which motel should I check into? Oh, we don't do that. We can't. No. I says, well, then you're going to have to do something different here because I'm not going to make it up there by 8:30 or 9 o'clock in the morning, whatever the hell it was. Sorry, just it ain't going to happen. And naturally sent me a delinquency notice, and which meant I had to call in. So I called in, and it was says, you know, this is under threat of law. You got to do this, you got to do that, blah, 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 blah. So I ended up showing up there today. And what do they do? Oh, thank you for offering your services was the last thing the judge said to us all today. And I was like, yeah, I really offered my services here in this, right? Like I really had a choice about whether I was offering my services or not. You just gotta love it. I'll tell you, you know, good old Massachusetts, baby. You know, they want to make sure that, you know, the law is friendly to you, you know, even while they're slipping the cuffs on you, putting you away in a cell. Just gotta love it. At any rate, other good stuff. Lots of crazy things going on in the news here tonight. The biggest one has got to go right again, right straight out of Massachusetts. I cannot believe what is happening here, folks. last week we, or a couple weeks ago, we elected a senator here to replace Ted Kennedy. State overwhelmingly went for the man, a guy named Scott Brown. And within, well, 2-3 weeks here, Scott Brown has already done his best to get us all fired up. This by Andy Taylor off the AP about 3 minutes ago. A bipartisan jobs bill cleared a GOP filibuster today with critical momentum provided by the Senate's newest Republican, Scott Brown of Massachusetts. The 62-30 tally to advance the measure to a final. Vote on Wednesday gives both President Barack Obama and Capitol Hill measure. Most other Republicans voted in favor of the filibuster because of strong-arm tactics by Democratic Majority Leader Harry Reid of Nevada. The bill is likely to enjoy a far broader GOP support on Wednesday when it's put to an up or down vote. Social Security payroll taxes through December and giving them another $1,000 credit if the new worker station is based on tax breaks. Economist Mark Zandi said the measure could potentially create, get this, 250,000 new private sector jobs. Now that's less than 4% of the 8.4 in voting to break the filibuster were two moderate New England Republicans. I don't know why they call these Snow and Susan Collins of Maine. Two retiring GOP senators. Kit Bond of Missouri and George Voinovich of Ohio, Democrat of New Jersey, was absent. Reid's bill is a far smaller measure than Obama's 862 economic stimulus bill enacted a year ago. It's also significantly smaller than a rival bipartisan bill unveiled earlier this month by two senior senators. The legislation also would renew highway programs through December and deposit $20 billion in the Highway Trust Fund. Now, I came to Washington to be an independent voice, to put politics aside, to do everything in my power to help create jobs for Massachusetts families, said Brown, whose election last month gave Republicans the 41st vote that could sustain GOP filibusters. Now, the Senate jobs bill is not perfect, but I voted for it because it contains measures that will help put people back to work. Now, for his part, Reid was clearly pleased. I hope this is the beginning of a new day here in the Senate, he said. Whatever this new day was created by, the whether this new day was created by the new senator from Massachusetts or for some other reason, I'm very, very happy. Now, George Voinovich, a Republican of Ohio, said he voted for the bill because the highway spending will create jobs and help states pay for important projects. If we don't do this, we're going to miss the construction season, and this is an area where you absolutely create jobs, Voinovich said. After the vote, Obama thanked the Senate. The American people want to see Washington put aside partisan differences and make progress on jobs. And today, the Senate took one important step forward in doing that, Obama said, adding that more needs to be done. Now, among Obama's proposals to boost the economy are a $250 payment to Social Security recipients, $25 billion to help cash-strapped states, and $30 billion in Wall Street bailout money redirected to help community banks lend to small businesses. That's a good first step, Obama senior advisor David Axelrod said. There's no doubt we need to do more. All right, and then the article here goes on and on and on, but it's all bunk. And what you don't see here is the part that's really killing me. Let me explain something to you, folks. Whenever the Treasury was out to sell bonds towards roads, they never had a problem with them. Whenever we needed to do something with the highways or build new highways, revamp them, do what have you, federal government, Federal Highway Administration never had a problem selling bills or selling bonds for this, which is the way it's always been done. Don't ever take any grief from any Democrat out there that tells you, oh, you don't want to pay taxes, how are we going to have roads? Because your taxes never paid for roads. You know, perhaps your local taxes in your town did. Perhaps your state taxes helped on some in your state. But on the national scene, roads were never built by taxes. They were built by bonds that were sold by the Federal Highway Administration. As a matter of fact, you could have, up to a couple of years ago, that was the one department of the government that always balanced its books. And its books were always open to the public, and the books were always online. And anyone that had a, bothered to care to look at them, which I did, would notice on there that a good chunk of their budget each year went towards retiring bonds. I know, when you retire bonds, that means you don't have to pay any interest on them anymore. You're all done, okay? Now that interest that they got to pay on those bonds came from fuel taxes, came from commercial registration fees, came from a host of other fees that were actually what I call user fees. You know, the roads were probably the one thing in this country where capitalism did its job. They were built on bonds. You all know what a bond is. A bond is an issue by the government that pays interest. It is a capitalist instrument. It's one of those kind of things where you spend a little bit of money today to get a lot more money back in the future. Very, very simple thing. Of course, you just got to wait for your money. And the government would take that money and do whatever had to be done with the roads. And then people were using the roads and paying gasoline taxes to use the roads and paying the tolls on the roads and what have you, and the registration fees and all the rest of it. That money came back in, and it was used to retire the bonds. Well, fact of the matter is, what you don't see in all of this, that they had to go out there and just basically take taxpayers' money and throw it at the highways. Well, that means that they're having a huge problem selling bonds, which is what has to be read into this. All right, now we already know that the Chinese over there are not buying any of our bonds. All right, at least, the claims are that they have slowed way down, that they're buying less and less of them. I'm here to tell you, folks, I don't think they're buying any. I don't think these people are buying any bonds at all. I think, matter of fact, for the most part, what I've seen in the bond markets, it is the Treasury buying its own bonds back with money created through quantitative easing. Right. Yep, uh-huh. And what do we see on top of that? Well, we've got, inflation coming out the ass. We see prices of everything going up all over the place. Now, one of the areas that this inflation is actually nailing onto, and it is coming at us really, really hard, may not be inflation per se. And what I'm referring to is what we're talking about this week. Over the week, I'm sure you guys have all heard the news that some of the major insurance companies out there have raised their health insurance plans in a big way, up to 40% in some of the places out there. And this, my friends, is like, everybody's looking at, geez, it's inflation hitting, it's the insurance companies ripping us off, it's blah, 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 blah. And I'm hearing more goddamn stuff, except for what I believe to be the real reason behind all this. Long-time listeners to this program will remember the three shows that I did in a row on the House health care bill when it was going through. Been wanting to do one on the Senate health care bill, but since that's never been posted online, where's our transparency at there, Mr. President? You haven't been able to do much about it. But, those of you who listen to the show understand that at the time, what was going on here, all right, was basically a huge insurance company takeover of the country, of the government. The qualified health benefit providers, those who would be left standing after all of the washout, the ones that got qualified by the government through some arbitrary legislative process, the ones who would be forcing the rest of us to go out there and purchase their insurance, or forcing the rest of us to subsidize those who can't pay for their insurance, those who are, of course, too poor or unable or, whatever other reason they got. Excuse me one second. There we go. It's all insane. Now, I'm here to tell you, folks, look, if you're an insurance company and you see what the hell's going on there, and you're looking at this, and you're trying to get the government to move forward to pass this bill, which is going to guarantee your profits forever, well, what's the best way to do it? I mean, the only way these guys are going to move is with pressure from people in the country. Now, obviously, people in the country have been pressuring them to do just the opposite, to trash all these health care bills. I mean, every single one of the polls that we're looking at out there, and we're looking, it ranges from a low of 60% to highs of 78% that American people do not want these health care bills. Well, if you're an insurance company, where do you go? How do you get the people to turn that around? How do you get that to change? Well, you got to say, you know, we pretty much convinced everybody that the government's going to reform health care. Ha, 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 right? Yeah, they're going to reform the health insurance industry. Ha, 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 ha. Well, let's make sure they really know that that reform is necessary. And jack them bills right up there, baby. Let's get them right up there. That should get the people in this country, you know, stoked to start moving on this health insurance. Well, that, to me, I'm sorry, folks, but that's all I see going on out there. I don't see anything different whatsoever. These people are manipulating us. They are manipulating the government, and it's just going down. It's getting nuts. It's turning into a nightmare. You know, couple that with this clown that's going on here with Scott Brown, who we, you know, the way I saw it, when I struck a vote for the man, it was to keep this health care out of here more than anything else. You know, it seemed to me that I listened to a lot of things that the guy had to say. Big government spending, all sorts of stuff, making them responsible. All the big claims that are generally coming from the right wing, this guy's turning around and doing just the opposite on. And I can't wait to see how he's really going to act on health care. Now, last week, I sent out an email, and I sent it out to quite a few of the senators in the Senate. And I directly emailed this to him. Matter of fact, I called Scott Brown's office and let them know what I thought about all this, and I said what it is I think you should do. But folks, to give you an idea here, I'm going to read this short note that I have sent off to all of our Republican senators. Sir, in a couple of weeks, some members of the U.S. Senate will be called to a conference on the subject of health care reform. Now, it has been suggested in some circles that the senators should not show up at all. Well, I believe this is wrong. I believe the correct thing for the Republican senators to do is for all of them to show up and act in unison. Now, the president may open the discussion with many different things, but he's going to end the opening of his discussion with one of two questions. He's either going to ask, why are you fellas holding up this process? Or he is going to ask, what ideas do you have to solve the problem that you know we have to reform health care? Well, the answer here should be very simple, very clear, very concise. You know, whoever the spokesman for the Senate ought to be should just step up and say the following. Sir, we believe that it is better to have 50 different states working out a solution than just a single federal entity. We believe that for us to take the U.S. Senate in some direction that would deny our states the resources and possibly the right to determine how they solve this problem would be to violate our oath to support and defend the Constitution. Sir, the 10th Amendment to our Constitution forbids us to take any such action. And at that point in time, just shut up. Don't say another word, guys. You don't have to say another word, because the next guy to talk here will lose. You know, this is a 10th Amendment issue. This is an issue here that's taking away rights from the states. Now, what do you mean? It doesn't mean you're taking away the rights from the states. You know, they're going to want to hear whatever it is you got to say. If the states come up with a better plan, they're going to do this. Well, hey, let's wait and see. You know, there are states out there right now that are pushing against the sovereignty thing. Texas drafting something on it right now, and a few others. People are not going to be allowed. Some of the states out there are not going to be pushed into a corner on this healthcare thing. And it's causing division. It's causing what's the word I'm looking for here? It's dividing up this country once again. You know, which is not a good position for the United States of America. Now, it's just absolutely ridiculous what the hell is going down on here, and this shit needs to be stopped. Now, after this, of course, I'm going to have to get a hold of Mr. Scott Brown there tomorrow and ask him what the hell is going on. You know, getting down and working with the Democrats is not a way to go here. I'm sorry, but when you compromise with the devil wins every single time. All right, these people have nothing but evil planned for us here. They do not care. They are spending like drunken sailors. Now, they understand that they got to get the economy jump-started back up there again. But what are they doing to jump-start the economy? Not a damn thing, because they are standing squarely in the way of anything that they might be doing to get the economy started up again. You know, it's a catch-22 situation. You may get a little bit of money from the government to get some seed money to get something started new. But the regulations and whatnot that you're going to have to be falling in under are going to prevent you from making any money in this business. All right, so nobody's going to go into business under these conditions. When you get into the conditions that we have out there in the economy today, you are stifling new business creation in a bad way. No one in hell is going to take his money out there, sink it into a new business, and think, oh, things have got to turn around. Now, the Democrats, of course, you know, with their pie-in-the-sky ideas, and all the rest of us just believe that it's a natural cycle, that it's going to come around, that there's no stopping them, that the greedy capitalists out there are going to have to start doing something if they want to maintain their incomes. Well, what the hell is it that makes them think they're going to start it here? You know, explain to me what incentive they have to start a new business here. If you got somebody out there that's willing to start something up, especially in the manufacturing field, the kind of thing that would hire lots of new jobs, well, where's he going to go? He's not going to do it in this country. Why would he do that? He's going to have to look at somewhere between 35 and 38% taxes. Of course, you can go to Singapore and get 23%. You can go to communist China and get 25% and a whole lot less regulations. You know, so it's simple-minded to stop and think it. You know, all I got to do is look at where the new business is coming from the world. Where is new investment pouring into? Where is it happening? You know, why is it happening there and not here? That's what you got to fix. You're going to have to take these tax rates down, folks. And please, I do not want to hear any more gripes from anybody out there that's going to hit me with, well, you know, those big companies only go over there for their labor costs. Bullshit. I'm not buying into it. Any way you look at it, I'm sorry, labor costs are minor compared to the amount of money that are paid in taxes. You know, it's absolutely positively ridiculous. They do not save the same kind of money by hiring cheaper labor than they do when they get even a 5% tax break. You know, I'm here to tell you, folks, if you sit down and you work it out and you do the numbers on it, you know, it becomes very, very clear right quick that labor is not the reason they are going over there. And I grant you, we got higher labor costs in this country, but why is that? You know, why is it that we got higher labor costs in this country than anywhere else in the world? You know, anybody ever stop and think of that reason? Does inflation come to mind? You know, does the destruction of our dollar over the last 40 years, you know, come to mind here? You know, anybody remember Richard Nixon totally untying us from any underlying substance whatsoever? You know, how about all the monetization that's happening with debt? And that's the one that I gotta love out there. Because let's face it, folks, once you have monetized debt, the only way you can back up your money is with more and more debt. The only way you're gonna have more money in the system is with more and more debt. And the worst part about it is the only way you're going to pay off any of your debts out there is with more and more debt. It becomes a catch-22. It becomes a self-feeding monster at this point in time. You know? When you understand that nothing but debt is what it is that's backing up your money, you will then understand that the only way you can get out of debts is by creating more debts. And the only way you're going to be able to pay off loans with interest, you know, when you're using debt for money, is to go out there and create more debt. You get yourself into a self-feeding cycle. You get a debt clock spinning like it's going out of control. And there ain't no way to stop it. There's just no way to stop it at this point in time. They have monetized debt. You know, so we're basically done on the money front here. I don't know where it's going to head to from here or how they think they're going to manage it. Of course, these brain trusts all think that, we'll be able to handle this. Why, we can regulate our way out of anything. We have the power of the U.S. government behind us. It's just insane. It's just plain insane. At any rate, more insanity would be for me to run into the bottom half of the hour here and not give my producer, Mr. Bob Hernandez out at Hernco, a shot at selling some of his goods. So, folks, we're going to take a short break, and we'll be right back. My name's Mark Belcher. You are listening to the Politics Cafe at www.hernco.com, the best in Internet talk radio. We'll be right back.
That's the sound of your classmate receiving an attachment of you posing in your underwear. Your ex-boyfriend forwarding the picture to his friends. It being sent to your coach. And worst of all, your dad. All because of the time you posted those pictures on your profile. Anything you post online, anyone can see. So think before you post. For more information, visit www.cybertipline.com.
Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Justice, the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, and the Ad Council.
Have you ever dreamed of being a karate master? Well, stop dreaming and start chopping with the Karate Glove.
Hi, my name's Molly. inventor of the karate glove, and I have just 1.5 words for you. Hi-yah!
The karate glove chops through anything. Just put it on and instantly chop through wood. Concrete.
Hi-yah!
Brick walls.
Hi-yah!
Trees.
Hi-yah!
Small cars. It can even chop through these 8 guitars. It chops things.
If I can invent a karate glove, just imagine what you can do. Visit inventnow.org to get started on your invention. Anything's possible. Keep thinking.
Brought to you by the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, the National Inventors Hall of Fame Foundation, and the Ad Council.
It's hi-ya time!
Janine Marks, a 12-year-old, was fairly normal. She spent a lot of time online. One day, she met a new friend. The new friend had the same problems at home. They liked the same bands. They worried about the same subjects in school. They promised to keep each other's secrets. They wished they went to the same junior high. The new friend had good news. He said he was going to be in Janine's area one Saturday. He thought it would be amazing if they could just hang out, go to the mall. Janine agreed. The new friend didn't want parents messing this up. Janine showed up alone. So did her new friend, who wasn't in junior high, wasn't nice, and wasn't a 14-year-old boy. Every day, children are sexually solicited online. Help delete online predators. Call 1-800-THE-LOST or visit cybertipline.com to learn how to protect your kids' online life. A message from the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children and the Ad Council.
And we're back. You're listening to the Politics Cafe, www.hernco.com. All right, folks. Now, people always tell me every week, you do nothing but rail on Obama. You never talk about any of his good things. Well, I'm going to tell you something, folks. The good things coming out of Obama have been few and far between. But sometimes you got to give credit where credit's due. Now, Obama isn't really totally sure about everything that's going on here. I promise you. But out in the Arizona desert, I believe it's in Arizona, well, it's actually out in California, out in the Mojave Desert, there is a company out there that is called Bright Source Energy. Now, any of you folks in here that watch the Discovery Channel or maybe the History Channel or one of the two up there, of course, they all run together anyway, may have seen a hour-long television show about these guys who were building a solar-powered energy plant out in the desert. Now, I had a keen interest in this because I had an idea for building something like this on a much smaller scale. Basically, it's using sunlight to heat water. And, you know, my idea here was to be to take a huge parabolic mirror, you know, one of those kind of things that works like a magnifying lens in reverse. You know, remember when you were a kid, remember how you used to take a magnifying glass and you would burn ants with it and start fires with it and burn people's toes and, you know, just have an all-around good time with the sun, because you could concentrate the sun's rays and into one tiny little spot and really get things heated up. Well, Bright Source Energy has taken, and if you go out to their website, brightsourceenergy.com, you'll notice that they have got one hell of a setup out there. They have built a tower with a boiler on the top of it and covered the desert with mirrors to shine up onto this tower. Now, they're all parabolic mirrors. They all concentrate the sun's rays in on one tiny little spot. And this thing works pretty damn cool. It really does. As a matter of fact, the plant that they're looking at out there right now does enough here, and I'm looking through it, but I believe it's enough to power all the energy needs for 160,000 homes. And it doesn't take up as much room as you think. I think this might be covering, you know, maybe 100 acres, you know, maybe 150, somewhere along that line. Not a lot, any way you look at it. And it's a damn good idea. It seriously is. It's a really nice one. Well, Barack Obama has come out this week and given $1.4 billion in loan guarantees for them to build another one. But then it goes on here to say why it is they got to build another one. Now, U.S. Energy Secretary Stephen Chu said today that Bright Source Energy was in line for the financing to help build the solar energy plants that will power 140,000 homes. Now the federal agency will consider the project and likelihood of being completed and the Oakland-based company's ability to repay loans before making a final decision. Now, here comes the kicker, though. They got to move this place that they've already built. Because environmentalists want it relocated because they say it will harm protected desert tortoises. Can you believe this, folks? I'll tell you something. Out in the middle of the desert, we now have to protect the desert tortoises. Now, excuse me, but hang on a second here. Look, I understand that animals, some of them, are a little better off to handle the heat than anything else. They really are. I mean, let's face it. You know what I mean? Some animals are built better. Your tortoises are one of them. But don't tell me that during the hot sun, when they're stuck out in the middle of it, if they can't find a place of shade to get into, okay, that they're not going to try to find it. Well, underneath all these mirrors is tons of shady spots. Seems to me that this is going to be of benefit to the tortoises. They want to get heated up. Hey, you walk out into the sunlight for a little bit of while, and you get too hot, you turn around, you come back into the shade. How much simpler could it be than that? But nope, not a chance, because if we are out there building something in their environment, then it must stand to reason that if these capitalists are in the environment building anything that wasn't there before, it must, by all of their logic, reasoning, and all their gifted wisdom, must be destroying that environment. Oh yeah, you just gotta love it. You just gotta love it, I'll tell you, folks. There's more lunacy going on out here, you know? Look, I'm at a point now where I really believe this environmental movement, you know, is just socialism masquerading. That's all it is. You know what I mean? Look, they're not out there to do anything whatsoever about the environment. They couldn't give a rat's ass. The environment to them is an excuse to stop any real progress. Now, don't forget, it is the progressives that are doing this. But if you're not making progress toward a destroyed society and utter socialism, tyranny, and slavery, well, it's not really progress at all, is it? You know, if you're trying to actually free yourself from the Middle East and their oil, you know, if you're trying to free yourself from nuclear energy and other things, you know, if you want to take up them up on their dream of solar power, well, you're going to have to build something to do it with. Personally, I'm sorry, but I look at this complex as sitting out there in the middle of the Mojave Desert, one of the largest deserts, and, you know, it's not hurting a damn thing, folks, but here you have it. Once again, environmentalists standing right in the way. You know, you gotta love it. Environmentalists, they want to get us off oil. They want to stop the carbon that we're dumping into the atmosphere. What happens when a wind turbine wants to get built? No, you can't have that. It's going to kill the bats. No, you can't have that. It's going to screw up the landscape. No, you can't have that. It's going to make too much noise. Oh, no, can't have that wind farm out in the ocean where nobody's going to see it. No, can't have that. Can't use tidal water for that because you're going to be destroying something. That's basically what they're trying to tell you is here. No, you can't have any energy. Forget that. You know what I mean? Unless you have your own beehives and are pouring candles or making them from tallow as in the old days, you know, you can't have any of these things. You're not allowed. You know, it's that simple. I mean, these people are just dedicated to taking us right back to the Stone Age. You know, as if somehow or another that would be more fun. Well, it would definitely be more equitable, and we would be more social justice and more friendlier to Mother Earth. I mean, I'll tell you, you just got to love these people. You know, the sickness that goes on in these guys is just unbelievable. All right, moving right along here, though. We got other things happening. We were talking last week. And I know I've got this somewhere deep in the stack of the stuff here. Talking about Iran. Starting up their grief last week. Well, this week they have they've come out even quicker here, or even better. Let me make sure I can find this. But I got one in the news here tonight about how the Iranians are now pointing out 10 sites where they are going to be building, not the actual nuclear power plants, but the places to where they're going to put the centrifuges, where they are going to be enriching uranium. For some strange reason, these clowns have come out this week and started up with 10 new places, and they're pointing out exactly where they are going to be and showing it to the whole world. Once again, folks, this is a push. Once again, you got to look very hard at what it is you are not seeing, or at least you are only seeing scattered reports of, and the scattered reports of the fact that there is still lots of violence going on inside of Iran, lots of protesting going on inside of Iran. Lots of anti-government sentiment going on inside of Iran. And these guys are doing their damnedest to agitate the rest of the world and get the rest of the world to attack them. Now, at this point in time, folks, I'm going to tell you something. Obama's probably sitting on his hands here, but if he is, he is doing what his generals are telling them. All right, it looks to me, you know, from everything that I can tell, that Iran is going to implode. It is going to fall down on its own here. It is going to have internal strife like no country in the Middle East has ever seen before. I'm here to tell you this, folks. When these same people that took over, threw the Shah out and all the Shah's guards have finally had enough of the Ayatollah Khomeini and all the clerics that are in charge over there, they are going to whip back at them. All right, and what is going to happen here will become a new Persian nationalism that we haven't seen in 500 years. I'm kind of interested to see what's going on here. What I'm hoping for here is that none of the countries around the world take the bait, because that's all this is, folks. It's nothing but bait. You know, and I'm convinced of this. You know, look, you guys all know me. Many people out there call me a warmonger. You know, I have in the past justified the war in Iraq. I've justified the war in Afghanistan, and I will continue to do that right on through the next two generations that I believe it's going to take to get these places settled down and have them functioning as working republics. Not Iran. Now, Iran's going to be a little different here, folks. Iran is going to go down on its own. At this point in time, the only possibility that the Iranian government has of rallying its people to its cause is if it gets attacked from the outside, and because it is crumbling fast from the inside. Damned if I could find that article that I had on this. At any rate, it's a good thing what's going down, and I'm just hoping like hell that nobody goes down the road of going in on them. Not at all. All right, now, where else? Up, here we go. Damn if I didn't find the article right when I was about to give up on it. At any rate, this by Ali Akbar Darayini from the AP. Iran said today it plans to build two new uranium enrichment facilities deep inside mountains to protect them from attack. A new challenge to Western powers trying to curb Tehran's nuclear power program for fear it is aimed at making weapons. Ali Akbar Salehi, who is also Iran's vice president, said Tehran intends to use its more advanced centrifuges at the new sites, a decision that could add to growing concerns in the West over Tehran's program, because the technology would allow Iran to accelerate the pace of its program. The two plants are among 10 industrial-scale uranium enrichment facilities Iran approved the construction of in November, a dramatic expansion of the program in defiance of UN demands that it halt enrichment. Hopefully, we may begin construction of two new enrichment sites in the next Iranian year, as ordered by the president, the semi-official ISNA quoted Salehi as saying today. The Iranian calendar year begins March 21st. Now, as of now, our enrichment sites will be built inside mountains, Salehi added, according to ISNA. The decision appears to be aimed at shielding the facilities from potential military attack. Israel considers Iran's nuclear program a strategic threat and has hinted at the possibility of airstrikes against Iran if world pressure does not halt Tehran's nuclear efforts. The Israelis have launched such strikes in the past. In 1981, an Israeli air attack destroyed an unfinished nuclear reactor in Iraq. Israel also hit a suspected nuclear facility in Syria in September 2007. Iran's enrichment of uranium is the central concern of the United States and other nations negotiating with the country over its disputed program, blah, 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 blah. You guys have all heard the rest of this. All right, now, note something else here, okay, that over the last couple of years that all of this has gone on, the Israelis, who have never been loath to attack someone else over a suspected nuclear program, have not attacked the Iranians yet. Now, what are the Iranians doing here? They're pointing at two mountains that are out in the distance, far away from everybody, where nobody is going to get hurt should it get attacked, you know, where they could probably just go out there and dump a lot of junk sitting around, maybe put a few guys out there to make it look like that junk is working, and say, yeah, this is a new nuclear power plant going up over here, and this could be a problem. Well, here you go, folks. That's nothing. The only thing that's going on here is a feint, period. F-E-I-N-T, a feint. They're pulling our legs, folks, and if anybody falls for this, they're going to have to be damn silly. Damn silly the way I look at it, at any rate. All right, enough that's coming out of Iran. More, strangely enough, A couple other odds and ends going on out here. But, you know, folks, one of the things that we have not heard from here over the last couple of weeks is, you know, any more of this. Yeah, well, yeah, let's get on to something else here. I got too much stuff in the stack in front of me here. It's getting nuts. All right, now, North Korea getting itself back into the news again. This down off of the Reuters network. South Africa has told a UN Security Committee, a UN Security Council committee, it intercepted a North Korean weapons shipment bound for Central Africa, which diplomats said was a violation of the UN ban on arms sales by Pyongyang. The seizure took place in November when South African authorities received information that a ship headed for Congo Republic was carrying containers with suspicious cargo, according to a letter sent by South Africa to the Security Council's North Korean Sanctions Committee. Several Western diplomats described the incident as a clear-cut violation of Security Council Resolution 1874, which bans all North Korean arms exports and most weapons-related imports in response to its nuclear program. The letter, parts of which were seen by Reuters on Monday, said North Korean company was shipping the agent, was the shipping agent, and the cargo was first loaded onto a ship in China, then transferred to a vessel owned by a French shipping firm, CMA CGM, in Malaysia. Diplomats said the French company alerted authorities to the fact it had suspicious cargo on board and would not and was not believed to have done anything wrong. The South Africans intercepted the vehicle and seized the containers, which held tank parts. The letter, which the committee received last week, said the South Africans discovered that the contents fell within the definition of conventional arms and that the contents consisted of components of a military tank, T-54, T-55. The letter said the documentation for the containers described the cargo as spare parts of bulldozer. T-54 and T-55 tanks were designed and produced in the Soviet Union in the 40s and 50s, but were later upgraded and made in other countries. Neither the French companies nor the countries involved had any immediate comment. And it goes on and on after that, but you get the gist of this. The North Koreans are still out there pulling some crap around the world, folks. Not getting away with it, though. And we've got to thank the French here for what they, you know, for looking in on this. Hey, look, yes, I know how we all feel about the French out there, you know, useless for the most part, but hey, every now and then, you know, what's the statement there? You know, even a blind squirrel finds a nut once in a while. It's going to have to happen, something like that along those lines. All right, upwards and onwards, and more from the world of politics here. By the way, former Vice President Cheney was hospitalized today, and he had some chest pains. As Cheney's assistant Peter Long issued a statement that the 69-year-old Cheney was resting comfortably and his doctors were evaluating the situation. Cheney has a history of heart problems and has a pacemaker. In 2008, doctors restored a normal rhythm to his heart with an electric shock. It was the second time in less than a year that Cheney had experienced and been treated for atrial fibrillation, an abnormal rhythm involving the upper chambers of the heart. Cheney has had 4 heart attacks starting when he was 37. He has had quadruple bypass surgery and 2 artery cleaning angioplasties. In 2001, he had a special pacemaker implanted in his chest. The pacemaker's battery was replaced last year, and then the entire device was replaced. The former vice president has kept a high profile since leaving the White House. He has sparred with the Obama administration over plans to close the U.S. Detention facility for terror suspects at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, and holds the trials of several high-profile detainees in civilian courts rather than military tribunals. He made a surprise appearance last week at the Conservative Political Action Conference, where he was accompanied by his daughter, Liz. He was greeted with chants of "Run, Dick, Run," but said, "I am not going to do it." And blah, 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 blah. I'm going to give you a little history of him, but not much more, though, than that. But at any rate, Dick Cheney is recovering. Should be okay. This man's had a history of heart problems here for the last 35, 40 years, you know. And it's, look, we can all go tomorrow. I mean, that's the way I look at it. But, hey, glad to hear that he pulled out and he's doing all right. All right, other things up into the news here. Nope. We got that one already. Okay, Hillary Clinton once again. Now, talk about bimbo. Senator of State Hillary Rodham Clinton called today for closer cooperation between Russia and NATO, the transatlantic alliance that Moscow views with suspicion as a relic of the Cold War and a potential threat to its security. Well, duh. In a speech launching an international seminar on revising NATO's mission for the 21st century, Clinton rejected Russian calls for a new European security treaty that Washington believes would lead to a diluting of NATO's influence in Europe and beyond. Let me state this unambiguously. While Russia faces challenges to its security, NATO is not among them, she said. We want a cooperative NATO-Russia relationship that produces concrete results and draws NATO and Russia closer together. Among Russia's chief concerns is NATO's intention to offer membership to the former Soviet republics of Ukraine and Georgia. It is also troubled by U.S. plans to place anti-missile defensive weapons in Romania and possibly other Eastern European nations. Now, Clinton called for more military openness between NATO and Russia. Relations were frozen in the months after Russia fought a war with Georgia in 2008. European security will benefit if NATO and Russia are more open about our armaments, our military facilities, and our exercises, she said. NATO and Russia should have a regular exchange of information on posture, doctrine, and planned military exercises, as well as specific measures to permit observation of military exercises and to allow visits to new or significantly improved military installations. You gotta love this, bimbo. Later, in a question-and-answer session with her audience in a hotel ballroom, yeah, where else would she be, Clinton was asked whether she can imagine the day when Russia becomes a NATO member, given that the Soviet Union's military might was the reason NATO was created in 1949. I can imagine it, she replied. I'm not sure the Russians can imagine it. More broadly, Clinton said NATO needs to revise its basic doctrine, known as its strategic concept, to take into account the changing nature of threats faced by alliance member countries. A group of experts led by former Secretary of State Madeleine Albright, is working to update NATO's strategic concept. It was last revised in 1999 before the alliance began substantial military operations beyond its borders, most notably in Afghanistan. The new concept is expected to be formally adopted at an alliance summit in November in Lisbon, Portugal. NATO nations had a major falling out over the Iraq War in 2003, with several, including France, Germany, and Belgium, opposing it and blocking alliance participation. NATO's basic purpose has changed little, Clinton said. I believe that the original tenets of NATO's mission, defending our nations, strengthening transatlantic ties, and fostering European integration, still hold, she said. What needs to change is how the alliance pursues its goals, she added. As any good soldier knows, success in a protracted struggle is not simply a matter of having more troops or better equipment. It's also a function of how effectively you adapt to new circumstances, she said. You don't win by fighting the last war. What do you mean? She cited the examples of recognizing that NATO is now engaged in combating security threats far beyond the borders of its member nations. Many threats we face have little or no respect for borders, she said. Whether we're battling piracy, the menace of terrorism, or the prospect of weapons proliferation, we must be prepared to address new dangers regardless of where they originate. Now, I'm sorry, but this is just a blatant one-worlder right here, making a move, found something else. You know, why bother going to the UN and trying to form a one-world government there? Because after all, progressives know, and, you know, make no bones about this, any of you lefties out there that are listening, especially some of the lefties that I've been hanging out with lately, and I know damn well are listening to this show, and who disagree with me on the fact that government is force. All right, Hillary Clinton knows exactly what government is. Hillary Clinton knows exactly that government is force. Okay, what good is it going to do to have a paltry force like the United Nations out there trying to institute the one world government? Let's go where there's a real force. Let's use NATO. You know, make no bones about it. The more people that you can get involved in NATO, the closer you're going to get to that one world socialist government that you have been worshiping since you were a tiny little girl. Make no mistake about it. You know, that's exactly what's going on here. I think it's so blatant and it's so obvious that it needs no further comment. You know, good old Hitlery, boy, I'll tell you. You know, Bill couldn't run the world, so she figures she's going to do it for him. You know, it's insanity. But we can expect more of this to come, at least over the next 3 years, till we get this, this administration the hell out of there. It's just insane. All right, now, a couple other things going on in there. the EU is slamming. Well, there's something evidently, and I haven't been able to find, find all kinds of backwash about this, but evidently Hamas killed somebody, and it's, come on, open it up here. Israeli, well, I mean, let me get down. This is by Robert Wheelard off the AP. Israeli's foreign minister sidestepped questions at EU headquarters today about his country's alleged role in last week's assassination of a top Palestinian Hamas operative, officials said. Avigdor Lieberman also avoided discussing the falsified European Union passports believed to have been used by the killers, despite pressure for answers in a one-on-one meeting with EU foreign ministers and the bloc's foreign affairs chief, Catherine Ashton. There's not been an acknowledgement on these issues, Ashton said. She planned to have dinner Monday with Lieberman. On January 20, assassination of Mahmoud al-Mabawudu in a luxury Dubai hotel has widely been blamed on Israel's Mossad spy agency. Investigations on several continents are examining the use of a bogus EU passport and credit cards linked to U.S.-based banks. Israel had linked al-Mabawudu to arms smuggling into Gaza and the slaying of two Israeli soldiers. The EU said in a statement that the use of false passports from several EU nations was profoundly disturbing. The British government said Monday 8 forged UK passports were used, 2 more than previously thought, bringing to 15 the total number of false EU passports allegedly tied to killing. Those also include 5 Irish passports, 1 French and 1 German. British Foreign Secretary David Miliband said he had met his Israeli counterpart in Brussels on Monday and stressed the need for Britain and Israel to cooperate, but said Lieberman had no information to give me. Britain's Serious and Organized Crime Agency, or SOCA, is investigating how the identities of British citizens were stolen. Britain's Foreign Office declined to name those whose passports were used. In Paris, French President Nicolas Sarkozy said nothing positive comes of such killings. With Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas visiting the French capital on Monday, Sarkozy also said France could not accept such executions. Well, think again there, mister. These people are out there doing what they do best. Is this a Mossad? We may never know. If it really is a Mossad, I think they would be looking everywhere else except at the Mossad. This is it's insanity. But, hey, whoever it was, good shot. That's all I got to say. Get rid of another one. Get rid of them, as many of them as you can there. All right, the ones that are out there picking up the guns against us, I do not think that we are ever, ever, ever going to be able to retrain and become productive members of a world. All right, they're going to be nothing but destructive. But as far as, you know, you folks all know my stance on the war on terror. It's going to take us 2 generations of raising these people up to learn how to live in liberty, you know, how to live with a representative government. It will happen, but first thing you're going to have to do is embrace individual dignity. All right, these people that are running around the world doing all the murdering here, you know, these Palestinians that you have pulling off their actions, you know, any of the rest of the Wahhabists out there, and not forget it, these people are collectivist in nature. They have already bought into collectivism. The fact that they are willing to put their own lives on the line in suicide bombings should tell you that there pretty much isn't any help of bringing them back. Forget that. What you've got to do is teach their neighbors how to live in peace. You know, what they got to do is going to have to get to a point in time where, you know, whenever they're approached by somebody, say, you must become a suicide bomber. Well, the potential suicide bomber got to turn around, thumb his nose at him, say, no, sorry, too busy. Got too much going on. Just bought a new house. Got to go to work to make the payments. Just bought a new truck. Got to go to work. I'm going to make the payments on the truck. No, I'm not going to die for you today because next week my son has a basketball game. None of this. You know, it's got to come to a point where these people have lives. You know, and the lives have got to be more than just sitting in a corner brooding, waiting for your next handout meal. All right, you're going to have to become productive people. Once they become productive, once they're allowed to keep the fruits of their labors, things will change. All right, with that, though, folks, one thing that doesn't change, it is at the top of the hour here. It's time to close up the cafe. Once again, the tables are getting piled high with the chairs. The lights are getting dimmed down. But as always, the cafe closes, but the bar will be open. Politics Lobby 4 here will be open for another hour or so. But I want to thank everybody for coming tonight, listening in to the Politics Cafe at www.herncode.com, the best in Internet talk radio. My name is Mark Belcher, and I'll see you guys next week, same time. Thanks for coming tonight, folks.